Welcome to the 90th episode of the Jamie Delaney Plant-Based Wellness Podcast. My name is Jamie Delaney, and I'm your host. I'm a plant-based cardiologist and endurance athlete living in Southwest Florida. Welcome. Today, I have one of my favorite guests on. He's a repeat offender from 2 years ago in October of 2014. And I think you'll really enjoy what he has to say. He probably answers questions about how you deal with people that aren't plant-based, that kind of harass you better than anybody that I've ever spoken to. And in 2014, he called himself a lighthouse, that he just tried to do better so he could be a lighthouse for others. Well, since 2014, I've renamed him. I think he's more like an air traffic control tower because he is widespread now and is just doing amazing things for himself and to help others. So you will enjoy listening to our chat and mainly Josh's discussion on this podcast. As far as myself, I am a little less than 2 weeks away from Ironman Louisville, so I've declared myself in taper, just a 10-miler this morning, but I tried to do it at race pace and felt good, so that's good for the old noggin. At this point, it's all a head game, so I either talk myself into it or talk myself into something else, but I'm excited for it and hope things go well and just try to stay healthy and enjoy myself to the actual day and enjoy the day. As far as the garden, things are going. I've got corn up. It's starting to be garden season in Florida. So the okra's still going. Peppers are in full bloom. I've got these little small Asian peppers that are fiery, but they're great in sauces. They're going. Tomatoes are going. Peppers, other peppers are going. Poblanos. The sweet potatoes are blooming again. And so we're having a good time. Mangoes on the tree. I think I got papayas, about 7 or 8 papayas hanging and growing. So hopefully they'll do well. So we're starting to get into nice weather season. This is the third day of autumn here in Florida. Can't really tell it. It was very hot this morning, but there's a little sense of fall in the air. You just have to be in Florida a while to appreciate it. I had a little goof in my nutrition class this week. I made sunflower seed meatballs, which turned out lovely. I baked about 60 of them, and I made homemade sauce with my little Asian pepper, and it was really good spicy sauce. So when I set up, we have the nutrition course off-site now. It's at the Chamber of Commerce building, which has a nice room with a little kitchen attached. So I set my slow cooker, and I thought I'd just keep everything warm until I got there in the afternoon. And I found out that sunflower seed meatballs do not hold up well when the sauce gets hot. So we kind of had sunflower meat sauce as opposed to sunflower meatballs, but nevertheless, they got to taste it, and the taste was still good. It's just the presentation wasn't quite as nice. I also made my favorite bok choy salad with oranges and pomegranates. California pomegranates are now in season, so those are starting to hit the store, and so they're really good with a lemon and a little bit of agave dressing. So that was good. I also spoke at the Food Forward event that the Humane Society puts on. It was located in Kaiser University in Lakeland, Florida. And it's a very interesting conference. Like to give a shout out to Ken Boltz, who I hope to have on the podcast eventually, and Carla Dumas, who is a registered dietitian that I have had on the podcast in the past. They put together a conference where they talk about bringing vegan options and plant-based options into hospitals and universities in particular, and they have a program that they actually teach chefs that are in the field to cook large quantities of plant-based food for, you know, the cafeterias, and they started their development of this program at University of North Texas in a canteen that was basically going to fold up. And so they decided to do a vegan option, and they went from 150 purchases to over 1,700 purchases in 2 years with a vegan cafe on campus. And so now they've went across the country teaching different campuses and, again, hospitals how to do Meatless Monday, how to cook and do these canteens and how to pull it off. And they have there's a cookbook. So it's really exciting that, you know, kids are starting to demand it. And if we get kids doing plant-based in their college years, you know, and you can avoid the freshman 15 or 30 pound excess, then, you know, you're well on your way to making this world a healthier place. So they're doing great work. I presented what I do in my nutrition course, and we had a panel discussion. There are a lot of dietitians there. A lot of people were very interested in, you know, why some silly cardiologist is teaching nutrition and not having a dietitian in her office. And, you know, it'd be great if I could have a dietitian in my office that was plant-based and wanted to do this. And that's probably the future. Right now, you know, the way insurance is set up, patients can't get that paid for. So there's only so much we can do on a, you know, outside cash basis. But, you know, that would be the ultimate goal, is to have somebody working with me that could do the class and just keep this class running, you know, all day long, so that people could drop in and out and learn how to do plant-based cooking. So we'll see how it progresses. You know, things happen for a reason, and we'll just keep plugging along, and I'm sure it'll all work out. Well, for today's interview, again, I'm going to be speaking with Josh LaJohnny, and I interviewed him on the October episode in 2014 for the first time, and you can get his whole story as far as his plant-based journey there. You know, in a nutshell, he was raised in Louisiana, in the Bayou. His whole family was overweight. He attained a weight well into the 300s, possibly 400-pound range, and was a defensive line football player at a college for a couple of years until he became injured, and came back and gradually started taking his life back and tried to get in shape. And he ran a 5K and finished it, and thought he could do better. He read a couple books, Finding Ultra and Rich Roll's book, which was Rich Bull's book, and Scott Jurek's book, and became plant-based. And the weight started to fall off, and he started to run. And when I spoke to him 2 years ago, he was getting ready to run the New York City Marathon, and he ran that, and he just kept running. He's been the Forrest Gump of the plant-based world. He started running ultras, and he just completed his first 100-mile race, which was the Wildcat 100 in Pensacola, Florida. So I'm not going to take anything away from him. I'm going to let him tell his whole story, because it's certainly worth the listen. And, you know, if there's any take-home messages from this interview, it's going to be that, you know, you have control of your own destiny, and you just have to stand up and fight for what you believe in, and don't be afraid to declare that you're going to take back your health. And I couldn't agree with what he said more, so enjoy this interview. Welcome back, Josh LaJohnny. Josh, we actually spoke in October last year, and at that time, you were getting ready to run the New York City Marathon and worried about completing 25 miles or 26.2 miles, and now you just finished the Wildcat 100 race in Pensacola. So congratulations, first and foremost, and welcome back.
Thank you, and thanks for having me back. That was actually October 2014. So yeah, it's been like time flies. I get so caught up in everything that's happening. Like, I can't believe, when I look back on stuff, I can't believe how long it's been since I've done some of these things. Like that initial Rich Roll interview also. And you were, I think, the second person that interviewed me ever. So it's really cool.
Yes,
to be back.
Yeah, now I'm watching you. You're become a finalist for the Runner's World magazine cover. So how's that going?
That's really cool. As far as I'm concerned, I've already won by being able to go up there for, you know, they flew me up to Manhattan and like spent 2 days up there hanging out with all of the other finalists and doing a photo shoot and doing video interviews and hanging out with Bart Yasso and like having dinner, like So I mean, I'm good. Like, I don't need anything else. It almost feels greedy to, not only does it feel greedy to ask the universe for anything else, but it feels icky kind of to pull for myself in this thing because of some of the wonderful, wonderful stories they have in these top 10 people. There's some really amazing humans in there, and I'm really pulling for a few of them. I have a few favorites.
You know, when we spoke, I guess, wow, I can't believe it was 2014. I guess I have been doing this for a while, but you described, and I have used your name and your quote often, you describe yourself as a lighthouse for others, but now I think you need to change that because now I think you're an airport control tower.
Oh, really? Okay.
So, you know, I mean, because you're really amassing quite a following, and, you know, your accomplishments are crazy. You know, for people that are just starting to listen, you were originally a football player and a big guy. Everybody should check him out on Facebook. And started one step after the other, losing weight. And then when plant-based in the world just went upside down, changing for you.
Yeah, it's crazy because I've really done nothing other than really learn to love myself and to make myself better with the thoughts in my head, the movement of my body, and the food that I put into my body. And so, but I've done that like in a real passionate, wholehearted, all-in sort of way, right? And so what's beautiful is like all of these cool things that are happening in my life are happening just as these like side effects of having really adopted that tact in my life. And so I've never sat down and said, okay, 5-year plan, here's what I'd like to do. I want to run 100-miler, or I want to run this many ultra marathons, and I want to be... That never even was a whisper of a thought. It was just me living in the moment and taking the next bite of life. And that is what's the most, that's the most beautiful thing to me in my story for me in my life, is just that all of these things that are happening to me are happening in, is just serendipitous events in an otherwise what could be seen as a real selfish existence of just trying to really make myself better in every piece of energy I exude. You know what I mean?
Yes, I don't think that, from what I've seen, I don't think there's a selfish bone in your body. So I'm not gonna let you... get to claim that so much. So, you know, you did the New York City Marathon, and when we last spoke, you know, your cholesterol had went down to 91. You know, if I can share some numbers, right, you sent to me, and there was a little bit of remnants of some fatty liver. That's all gone, I assume.
I assume. I haven't been back for more blood tests. I guess I probably should. Yeah.
Okay. And are you doing B12 now, or are you just doing the nutritional? Yes. Okay, good. Cool.
Yes, ma'am.
And, you know, so you went from the 26, and then, so what led, you know, I saw you, you know, I see your Strava reports, and, you know, the mileage was going up, and I was like, something's happening here. You know, he's running this big long mile. And the next thing I knew, he's like, you're in Pensacola for the 100 race. So how'd you get hooked into that one?
It was just the next step in the progression, really. Like, you know, so 2014 was the marathon, and that was the one in New York was my first sub-4-hour effort. And that's all I was really hoping for there, was the sub-4-hour effort. And I wound up doing like 3:47, which I was beside myself. I was so happy. I knew that I had really worked hard, and I had really poured my soul onto the marathon course in New York City that day. But I was still really surprised that I was, not only was I sub-4 hours, I was sub-3:50. And I felt pushed by everyone who had taken the time to help me in that charity effort and that charity bid to get into the marathon. And I really felt amazing after that race. And I have running buddies who had sort of grown a tight knit little group with as I was training for the New York City Marathon with our Thibodeau run group here in town. A couple of those guys were more ultra. They were more interested in the ultra world than I had ever thought I might be. I still am. I'm totally in love with the marathon, the road marathon, running as fast as I can for 26.2 miles. There's something that really, you know, sparks me in that race, in that distance, in that race. But these buddies were like almost in a dare. Hey, we're signing up for the 50K in Destin 50 that following February, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, yeah, well, that sounds fun, but I want to go re-attack rock and roll first. So that was the step after the New York City Marathon. Was in 2015. I went back to rock and roll, and I wound up running rock and roll even faster in like 3:34, right? So I felt really good, and I felt like all of that marathon training had probably prepared me to be able to go do a 50K on the beach in Destin. So I felt good about having signed up for that thing. And literally, I know that those two races are completely different animals. I wasn't prepared for that at that time, you know? And so the 50K in Destin was really sort of my first lesson in what an ultra marathon was, what it takes mentally, physically, and how to approach it. I mean, when you're off of the running surface of a road, things completely change. So your paces are completely different than what you expect in your brain. And the time in which you, like, so I started off that 50K at what I thought was a very conservative pace. And in retrospect, it was not conservative at all. So by mile 25, I was really struggling and I sort of limped my way into finishing that first one. But it just like that first Crescent City Classic did for me, that first, and really like said, hey, you can do this better than that. It's great that you finished, but Josh, you can do better than that. And so that really intrigued me in the ultra marathon distance, right? So in 2015, for the rest of that year, it was all ultra marathons for me. I signed up for 100K last October, and I spent all through the entire summer last summer preparing for that 100K. Did a couple of 50Ks along the way, I think, just in training mostly. Nothing organized, really. A lot of what we call fat ass runs. Mm-hmm. We did those. And then I got the 100K. And all this while, I was really just trying to finish these ultra events because the mileage was still kind of overwhelming. And I get to the 100K, and I just finished. And I was happy with that. But what happened in that was I wound up being third overall in that 100K. So I was like, man, what if I pick another ultra and do it, train for it like I would train for a marathon? Like, I don't want to just go finish. I have a time expectation, and I'm going to train for that specific expectation. And that's why I signed up for the Bearbait 50 miler this past January. And so I trained really hard, changed up a lot of what I was doing in training, started doing back-to-back long runs for the first time, right? So I was doing 25 milers on Saturday and Sunday, that's when my mileage started to get up over the 80-mile mark for the first few times and training for that 50 miler. And lo and behold, I was wanting to do it in under 10 hours. That was the goal. It felt like a good, solid goal. All of my experienced ultramarathoning friends said that would be a great goal for your very first 50 miler. And so I wound up finishing because the race course was a little long. It was just 4 mile loops, and we did like 12, we did 13 4 mile loops. So the course wound up being longer than 50, but I got to 50 in like 8:45. And I was just blown away at that. That was really awesome. But on top of that, actually won that 50 miler. And it really sparked me in the ultra distance, right? And so the next progression to me was, hey, now, you know, it's time to seriously think about a 100-miler. In the meantime, I have friends that are finishing their first 100-miler. Those three, me and those two guys that did Destin together, in the time that I was doing my, you know, just doing my year of ultra marathons in 2015, they were both doing their first and second 100-milers. And so I'm seeing them, I'm pacing them for, you know, 30 miles, 20 miles, whatever it might be. And I'm becoming more and more intrigued and seeing this 100-mile distance. And it's like a surreal, it's an event. It's not just a race. Like it's an undertaking. It's like a logistical thing to get done. It's almost like a job to get completed. And that really intrigued me. And so after I helped those guys kind of get through their first couple, everybody was encouraging me, and I felt the draw to do my first 100-miler. And so I trained all through this past summer. One thing I did learn about helping my buddies was they both did 100-milers where it was cold when I was pacing them. And as I'm pacing, because my one buddy, he did his first 100-miler in Pinhoti in Alabama, and I ran 30 with him through the night, and it was like a misting rain, and it was probably in the high 30s, low 40s that night. And I was like, this is completely miserable. I do not want to be cold. And then Rocky Raccoon in February with my buddy Wally, same thing in Rocky Raccoon in Texas. It got really cold, and I was like, I'm not interested. I'm going to pick a hot one. And so that's why I picked Florida in September. And that way I could just train all through the summer, be really acclimated to the heat, because we have plenty of that here. I'm used to the heat. And so that's why I picked the Wildcat in Pensacola on September 3rd. And, you know, same thing there. I just worked my way through the summer, really committing to this distance. And I'll have to say, though, that the training for this, I went to some really bad places. I overdid it, I think, a few times, and then started to really doubt myself mentally, and started to feel, honestly, if I'm just being honest, started to feel like a fraud, like going, you got all of these people looking at you and you can't handle it. And like, honestly, you know, you go to this place where you wear yourself physically, and then like the mental, you realize you're wearing yourself mentally as well. And so I had to take a step back for a week in the middle of that training plan. I just went to a really bad place. I was having some physical problems on my left leg, my left calf, with my first 90-mile week. And so it was just the whole training process for that 100-miler was a real learning experience. But I rebounded from that, and I started to feel strong. I slowed my pace down like everybody who knew me said I ought to do. I was running way too fast for that first like third or half of that training plan. And when I started to crack back and start to wrap my mind around, Josh, you're going to be running for 24 hours pretty much. So just let's slow it down and try and identify that all day long effort. And so that's what I did for probably the last third of that training plan. And I think it paid off, because I got there, and it was a really, really hot day. It got up to, I think, 104 heat index throughout the day that day. But I was able to get my first 50 in around 10 hours. I was just a little over 10 hours. That's right around where I was hoping to be. And I wound up being able to push through the night in some really sticky, rough places throughout that race. And really finished strong. I hit a rough patch in the early 80s, like in 83, 82 in that area. But I was able to go negative from 83 all the way to the finish. And in the last mile, ran my fastest mile of my 100-mile race. And it felt amazing. And then when I was done, I started thinking about, boy, I could have, you know, you know how it is in races. You see all of the things that you could have done that cost you some time. And so now that's the place I am right now. Like I am super proud. I'm happy to to do it not under 24 hours like what the goal was, but I actually got in under 23 hours, and I was able to run really strong in the last 10 miles especially. And so I was really proud of all of that. But then you go, your brain starts going to, well, I think we could probably shave an hour off if we had done this differently, if I hadn't got under caloried at this point and blah, blah, blah. And so that's how I got into, that's the progression to the 100 mile, race in sort of Cliff Notes version. So a lot of, from the outside looking in, people always in the common comment is, oh, I couldn't imagine. Well, you're not supposed to be able to imagine unless it's like the next step in your progression. You know, it's okay to not be able to imagine running 100 miles. I know I couldn't. There was no way I could imagine that ahead of time. And so trying to imagine it sometimes can deter you if you don't like just voluntarily look at it aspirationally or inspirationally. And sometimes, because I know I deal with people that do this, and they look at that achievement and compare it to themselves and beat themselves up over, oh, well, I could never do that, la, la, la. And it's like, no, that's not really the best way to look at it, in my opinion. Yeah.
It's very interesting because it sounds almost identical to your weight loss journey. You never looked at, okay, I got to get 250 pounds off by next year. It was a progression for you. So I'm wondering if, you know, in some respects, your weight loss journey was actually training for your ultra marathon journey.
In a lot of ways. And I think that being an ultra marathoning plant eater is essentially human. I think that's the big epiphany that I've had in this whole process, is like plants and running combined is like the nature's protocol for the human organism. And so the more I believe it, the more I live it, the more I believe it, the better it makes me feel, the more beautiful things are happening in my mind and in my body and in my life. And so I think, and I'm a simple guy, so I try to get to simple things. We get into all the science because there's all these real juicy sources for very, very specific science with nutritionfacts.org and the China study and prevent and reverse heart disease and all of the great articles that Dr. Garth Davis shares. And we have like this overwhelming volume of stuff that we could potentially learn all the bits and pieces and be able to win every argument against every person that says something about being vegan or being plant-based and running too much and all of those things. But for me, I've tried to zoom away from it and understand that plants and running very organically is creating this very authentic, natural human organism in me. And that has been the huge epiphany to me. It's like, no, not don't identify running as your thing. Understand that running is a human thing. It's almost exclusively human to do this bipedal running. And so to adopt that movement and then adopt the plants, adopt the food that running would be able to get for you, be able to produce for you throughout a natural human life, without guns and tools and stuff, to put those two things together sort of just kind of creates what nature's default would have you be. Does that make sense to you at all?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, and so it's a lot simpler than worrying about, all the, like, the endothelium and nitric oxide and production and TMAO production and all of the good, solid scientific reasons to do it. If you zoom away and understand it, you know what? It makes pretty good sense that this human body is kind of meant for bipedal locomotion over big distance in a search for edible plant life. Okay, I'm going to do that. That makes good sense to me. I'm going to live that way, and we'll see what that manifests. And this, what you see and hear and that, this is essentially what that protocol has manifested in my life, you know?
That's really good. When we talked way back when, you were trying to do a lot of slow, long volumes. And of course, when you ramped it up for your marathon better time, you know, I would guess you were doing some speed work for this. Were you kind of following an 80-20 type of deal with a lot of slow stuff?
Well, that was what my good friend Rhea was trying to get me to do. From the very beginning, she's done several hundred miles, and but I skipped a part in there because I ran the Rock and Roll Marathon again in 2016, after the 50 miler, right? So I ran the 50 miler in January, and then I immediately went into getting ready for the Rock and Roll 2016. I didn't have a lot of time to get marathon ready after that 50 mile race. And so I sped up a lot after the 50 miler, and I felt really good about my marathon effort, and I was proud, and I was like, oh, because I ran 3:24 this year in the same marathon. So I was like, oh, well, I'm a fast guy now. I'm faster. So when I went back to ultra marathon training, I had adjusted all of my easy, quote unquote, easy paces to something that was a lot faster than my body was used to previously. And I think, Rhea was integral in warning me against that. And, you know, I didn't listen very well, and thinking that, hey, that's great. I love advice, but I'm going to put my ideas into practice. And if they cause me to blow up and fall apart, then I'll take those results, to heart, and I'll adjust. So that's essentially what happened. I had been told several times that I should be doing the 80-20 thing, like what you just suggested. But I was in the back of my mind knowing that I'm training for a 100-mile race, but when I'm done with it, I would like to Boston qualify. So I don't really want to lose any speed gains I've made. And so there was like a juggling act there between me understanding that I need to slow down, but also not really wanting to slow down because I felt like I had worked so hard to be able to run a 7:50 pace easy. And I didn't want to slow down much, much slower than that. But my body forced me. I had to eventually. So to answer your question, no, I didn't start off that way, but I wound up that way. And that's, I think, when I finally gave in and started doing that is what really had me prepared to be able to run hard in the 100 mile race. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. So I thought it was really great. I watched the end. I read your race report, and you know your friends and family were your pacers.
Amazing.
Yeah. Your support. You know, your support was amazing. It was almost like people were fighting to get a chance to do a lap with you. But
they were. Yeah.
But I also noticed that you're all in, and your journey and speed of this transition, and you know, from big guy to little guy to marathon runner to ultra, your family, not everybody has kept up with that.
No, it's probably overwhelming to think about sometimes, and see me, to see that. And not everybody buys into how bad the running, like, to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. How to buy into the pain involved, right? I look at the pain and the discomfort and the suffering associated with these voluntary activities as not something to endure per se, but something to actually chase and feel them on purpose because I feel like it makes me better. And that's a different place to get to in one's life, right? And so, yeah, that part is slow going to be able to really truly adopt the volume of movement that I think would be normal in a natural human existence. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, you know, you've come full circle with this. You've observed it. Now you're working with to help others through your Big Change program. And so now I have a question for you.
Shoot.
So what would you say if you saw someone that was, you know, close to where you were in your shoes, say a woman, and I'm going to put her significantly overweight, say, you know, probably close to 100 pounds overweight. And you saw her and she's like, you know, Josh, I don't, you know, I've done this plant thing. I've even gained weight on a juice fast, and I really don't eat very much. And, you know, I eat very small meals and salads most of the time. And it just, you know, weight, it just doesn't come off. What do you say to that?
It's you are doing two things, I would almost bet you. You are eating, even though it's your food intake is too calorically dense and probably too voluminous. That's one. I really have a hard time. And they have you also probably have something that I call ghost servings or ghost calories, because you're going to claim publicly and out in the open, because I'm a person who's been there and I know, and you'll never admit to some of the things that you are eating privately. So that's one thing. The other thing is what you are eating, you're staying technically plant-based overall. And so you'll allow yourself to eat things that probably has oil in it, and it's probably baked goods, and it's probably very calorically dense. I don't think you're staying far enough to the left of the caloric density scale, like Jeff Novick and Chef AJ talk about, right? I think that's very important, not as a trick, but as natural, attainable human food in the wild. If you think how we would be eating, it would be very calorically dilute foods. So that's one thing in the food, in the menu part of it. The other thing is what you got to understand is we all get food without having to move for it. All other animals do that. Squirrels eat nuts and birds eat things and snakes and every, but all of these animals have to move in a relationship that is in balance with the thing that they consume in their environment. We don't. Even if it's healthy plant-based food, if you're not moving also, you're going to have a metabolism problem. You're going to you're not really burning through the energy that you put into your body. And so to exist in that way, you would have to eat very, very, very tiny portions of food. And I don't think that that's sustainable at all. I think that even among us, the people who identify least with being athletes are inherently as humans athletic. Now that athleticism may only produce a 20-minute mile for you right now, but you need to go and string together two or three of those and move the body in an aggressive way that a human is meant to move. Get outside and sweat. Get your legs sore. Have something to recover from. Make the body do what it's meant to do. Recover tissues, breathe hard, sweat. Put all of those systems to work and put the correct food in the body to augment that. So that menu and that movement needs to go really like intertwined together. That is very important. And on top of all of that is you have to develop a mindset that's going to help you sort of navigate the storms of the social pressures involved with making changes to how you eat and move, right? So you have to find what's stopping you from letting the most authentic you out of the cage. What it's there, it's ready. It's not a matter of you building it and creating it or finding it. It's there, it's ready to come out. It's just a matter of you being strong enough with yourself and loving yourself enough to not give a damn about what people say about you eating broccoli at a birthday party instead of cake, or you passing on cake, and or whatever the case may be, socially. Because I have found that the food's not the hardest part. The food's pretty simple to get and understand. The hard part is dealing with all of the noise around you for being different. And so there's something there's some internal work that needs to take place for you to be comfortable with yourself enough to be able to stand against the current of that, to be able to eat the food that is necessary to complete the human equation along with that movement component, right? And that's what people are doing that are telling me that I'm doing stuff, but I'm not losing weight, right? But I know what you're doing. You're doing it wrong. You're still eating too many tortillas and too much bread. And even if you're not eating that, maybe you're eating too much volume. Period. You can just eat too much. You can just eat too many beans and potatoes in a day, and just eat. That's all you do is eat and eat and eat and do this gorge eating. You can get over-caloried if you're not moving at all. And so there's ways to not lose weight. So it's a real deep, overarching, multi-faceted thing that needs to happen. And the best way to do it is kind of the way I've intuited it, is just sort of by organically letting yourself go into that nature's, into that logical protocol. You know, does that make sense at all, or did I lose you? Yeah.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
because I get that all the time, especially from ladies, and I'll get that message all the time. In a nutshell, what you just asked me, and it's hard. It's hard to explain. It's hard to get people on board in it, because there's always a million different yeah buts, and it's like, okay, I can't fight all of them for you, you know. I just can't do that, right?
Yeah, I wanted to hear your perspective on it, because, you know, I mean, it's again, I think, you know, it's coming from someone that's walked the walk. You know, I think you see the progression, and I love the reference to the ghost calories, because I do believe that, you know, even if you interview, you know, 100 people on the street, whether they have a weight problem or not, you know, you're going to forget 20% of your calories. You know, you forget what you ate half the time, and you know, people don't realize mm-hmm. what they're grabbing, especially if, you know, you're making a lunch, or you know, fixing the kids, or cleaning up a kid's plate that they didn't finish it, or, you know, cleaning up the dishes, yep. and whatever type of thing you can, you know, or hit sticking your head in the refrigerator and seeing what you could grab, and it can add up very quickly.
Eating three Lara bars instead of a half of one, or one, or maybe you just don't put, like me, because I do have a food addiction background, right? So I know Lara bars are technically okay foods, right? Except for, you know, the Esselstyn protocol says no way on that, right? Because they're dried fruit and all. But if you look at the ingredients, it's a very simple thing, right? But it's very calorically dense. And it's so, because of its caloric density, it's very pleasure inducing. And so they are very easy to overeat on. And so I just don't buy them. I'll have them. I'll buy one at a time. I'll buy one and I'll eat it, and then I'll move on. But what I think what people get tricked into, or what people do accidentally, is they stockpile things in their pantry that are technically okay and fit within the whole food plant-based protocol. But they have them stockpiled, and therefore they can eat them in a disproportionate way, right? And I think that happens a lot. And I think when people come to me and say, oh man, because I've had people literally break it down and tell me, yeah, you know, I'm running 5 miles a day, and I eat, and tell me what they ate, and then I'll do the calorie count on what they ate, and I'll say, so you're eating You're telling me that you eat about 1,800 calories a day, and you run 5 miles a day, and you've put on 20 pounds in the past 3 months. And when I put it back to them like that, they see how absurd that is. That's just not true. There's no way that that's accurate. And that's what people are doing most of the time, whether it's plant-based or not. Because even inside the plant-based movement, it's very, very clear that you can lie to yourself and therefore accidentally lie to people who are trying to help you in your efforts to lose weight and become lighter, leaner, fitter, faster, stronger, all of that stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. And you hate to call someone a liar because you can't do that. But it's just a fact. You're not gonna tell me that you're doing everything right, and you just can't seem to lose weight. That's just biologically like not gonna happen. That's not accurate.
Yeah, it's more of a perception, but it is very difficult to dance around it when you're, you know, because you're sitting there and you're like, you know, you just want to say no way, no way, no way, but you can't really come back that way. And getting people to understand that, you know, it's just, you know, most of the time is you're just overlooking things. And a lot of times, a lot of times it'll take me 30 minutes talking to somebody before it finally comes out what it was, you know, whether it's, you know, the other day I had a guy and it took me forever to find out that, you know, he only ate 2 meals a day, yet he was, you know, 280. And turned out, well, the hunk of cheese and crackers, that didn't count in any of that, you know. So
yeah, exactly.
And
I think that's why Dr. Garth Davis prescribes a food journal, right? And because, and you know, it sounds like a lot of work, but you know, I think that that's actually probably for his benefit. Because if you're fudging the food journal and then you bring the food journal in and you say, "Oh, that's all I ate," and then but you're not you know, there's been no physical manifestation of you having eaten so perfectly per your food journal, then something's not jiving there, you know. And so it's a tool probably for him to be able to go, "Are you sure? You sure that's all?" But it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. And because we lied, you know, we really deceive ourselves as overweight people and overeaters. We always like, you know, that's what we do. It's what we do. And so bigger than the food and bigger than the movement, that's why I said it kind of encapsulates everything, is your mindset and your ability to really sort of take that wounded person that and hold his or her hand and say, "Hey, I got you back. We're going to do this. We're going to fix this together," and really develop a sense of self-love and start to walk away from those things that are holding you back. I don't have the answer for what's holding you back. You already know the answers. You already know, but what you're trying to do is outsource your success. That way, whenever it doesn't work, it's the person you paid to help you's fault. And that's where it gets tricky, because the answers are already inside you. You already know what you shouldn't be doing. So if you're coming to me and telling me you're not losing weight and you're doing all these things, you know, as you're talking to me, the things that you're doing that you probably shouldn't be doing. And it puts a person like me trying to help you in a very weird, awkward situation to wade through all of that muddy water or whatever, you know. It's tricky.
And then, of course, back to the, you know, the external pressures. I witnessed this week, you know, our doctor's lounge food is just abysmal. And I never eat in there. If I do eat in there, I bring my own fruit usually in the morning and sit there and have a cup of tea and eat my fruit. But anyway, I was there working, and a surgeon that I've been working with that actually had a couple of mini strokes. And I got him plant-based after a couple tries, you know, falling on the wagon, off the wagon. And so he comes in to try to get some food in the doctor's lounge between procedures. And he sits down with some other colleagues. And I'm listening, you know, I'm a couple tables over, so I can kind of, I'm eavesdropping, so to speak, but trying to, you know, stay out of his business for the most part and let him go. And He was abused. He was abused the whole time he was trying to eat lunch about what his choices were, that he was eating plants, that he was eating salads. Why was he doing that? Where was he? You know, the questions just on and on and on. And, you know, he wasn't quite armed with enough responses, nor did he want to, you know, he didn't want to bring attention to himself. He didn't really want to talk about it. And I thought, you know, you poor guy, you're finally trying to do the right thing. And your colleagues who are medical professionals are abusing you over it, you know, because they're wanting to eat this, you know, just terrible. There's always all kinds of meats and cheeses and all this terrible stuff, you know. And I thought, you know, this poor guy, I don't know if he has a chance in the world as long as he's going to come in here and try to eat, because, you know, it's just so hard to stand up to that day after day after day.
It is. It's like Chinese water torture on your brain. You know, and people, and so what it feels like is you feel like you're constantly spinning a plate. Like it feels like you're constantly spinning plates to keep these healthy habits going. And that's unfortunate, but that's what the social pressures do. So you have to develop it within your own mind and psyche that is just you being. You're being. I'm not spinning plates to eat broccoli instead of brownies. That's not an effort to me. That's just who I am. That's what I am. And I'm indignant to the fact that you think I should eat a brownie because it's somebody's birthday or because it's Christmas or because it's Thanksgiving. I'm indignant to that. I'm like, it irritates me. And so that's the switch that I wish I could just flip for people. It's not a, well, because the way you handle the social thing is like, you know, it's like, well, I'm on a diet right now, so I can't really do that. I hate the term, can you eat that or can't you eat that? It's not that at all. I'm not eating that. I don't eat that. Have you seen my before pictures? Do you see where I was in my life? It's that food right there that got me there, right? So now I'm a completely different human. You just complimented me when I walked in the door. This is how I eat. I'm eating like a human now. I don't eat like a glutton anymore. And so the fact that you think I should entertain that gluttonous eating because of some special occasion irritates me, right? And so I wish people would get more angry about the social pressures instead of just weathering them. And so often that, you know, I tell my friends that come to me with that, oh man, well, it's Mardi Gras. I don't know. It's hard. I was at a fish fry or whatever. I actually look forward to instances where I'm going to stand out like a sore thumb because I'm not eating crawfish or I'm not eating fried fish at a fish fry or I'm not eating steak at a barbecue. I look forward to that because you never know who's going to have a seed planted in their psyche, because Josh, who's in shape now, is still not entertaining these foods. And even subliminally, it might happen for someone. So I take that as like a nugget inside of myself that's yet another reason for me to stand strong and do the things that I know are healthiest for me, is because it's not just about me. You never know if what someone saw me do might help them avoid a heart attack 6 months from that, right? And so I play those games. You have to really figure out a way to build that psyche and do it. And it's a struggle. I don't really know how I don't have a step-by-step process for someone to do it. All I can say is, hey, let's be friends and maybe some of it will bleed off. Right? Maybe it's contagious if we hang out long enough or if we in contact long enough. I don't know. But I look forward to standing around a table full of junk food with everybody gorging and going, oh, you're not going to have any, man? This is delicious. It's like, yeah, no, I'm not. I'm going to have a carrot stick and a broccoli, and I'm going to drink a little bit of water, and I'm going to have just as much fun as you, and I'm going to wake up in the morning without a hangover, and I'm going to go run, and I'm going to have a good time, and I'm going to enjoy my whole life, not just this 30 minutes of eating crap, you know?
Yeah, that's fantastic. And, you know, I think it is difficult. I heard Will Tuttle speak one time, and he talked about, you know, veganism. You know, you can change it to plant-basedism, plant strong, but, you know, you find out about it, and it's like, oh, then it's really cool, and you do it, and you become very excited, and you become very passionate. But then there's this stage where sometimes people become angry that other people aren't, and then they aren't sharing their passion. And, you know, I think you brought up a really good point. You know, it doesn't matter if somebody shares your passion, but it's also okay to be passionate. You don't have to make excuses for the way you eat. And it's okay. You know, I mean, I go all, you know, it's like they, you know, there's that joke that if you want to know if somebody's a vegan, you don't have to know because they'll tell you. You know, and, you know, so sometimes I try to shy away from that with, and I play down how I eat, you know, unless I'm asked or whatever. But, you know, I think, you know, listening to you, I think that it's completely okay to say, yeah, this is who I am. I'm broccoli. You know, like, what was that? I forget what her name was, but, you know, I am woman, hear me roar. You know, it's like, I eat broccoli and hear me roar. You know, it's like, I can roar on broccoli. So look out.
Right. I mean, you know, shoot holes in my existence because, I mean, what's so bad about my life because I'm eating broccoli and you're eating brownies? Why do you feel sorry for me? Why are you coming from a place of, oh, I mean, come on. Like, you know, and I don't have to go into a room full of people eating brownies and go and slap it out of their hand and say, what is wrong with you? You're already 100 pounds overweight. Why in the hell are you eating a brownie? I don't have to go and do that. I think the fact that I've lost 200 pounds and I'm standing in a room and I've already, quote unquote, gotten it done and I'm still not participating in that speaks volumes to people who haven't gotten it done and are still participating in that, right? And I know it did for me when I was overweight. There was an instance where we had dinner, and I've never really told anybody this, but we went and we had dinner with some friends at a place in New Orleans. And this was, I was losing weight at the time. I was probably down 85, 90 pounds or so. And, but at that time in my transition, in my story, I was still kind of, whatever when it was like special occasions. Right. And so I was at this cool restaurant and we got some pizza ordered and, we having some beers and all of that stuff. And the most fit person at the table, a girl who runs and is extremely fit, she was the only one of us who ordered a salad and asked for the dressing on the side and drank water. And it really resonated with me. And I was like, oh, well, that's why she's fit. That's why she looks the way she does. It's because this isn't, she doesn't use a hack to get that way. Her life manifests that. How she behaves manifests what you see in front of you. And that resonated with me, not just with her. I know another man here in Thibodaux who's the same way. He's never, ever, you know, like I remember a friend of mine was going fishing with, and I'm just, nobody's going to know who I'm talking about, but Mr. Blake the next morning. And my wife and her friend tried to give him some cupcakes to bring on their fishing trip. And they gave one for each person that was going to be on a boat. And he said, oh, you don't have to give one for him because he's just not going to eat that. And it resonated with me that Blake's not going to eat one cupcake on a fishing trip with his family in the morning. Like, I was like, oh, so it's okay to just say done. That's not how I do. I don't eat cupcakes ever. Not if it's your birthday, not if your wife made it, not if it's got cute icing on top of it. Like, I don't do cupcakes. Sorry if that offends you, if that bothers you. And so that's, so I've picked up those nuggets along the way, and they've really, and I've like, I've really kind of adopted them. And it doesn't mean that I have to, like I said, it doesn't mean that I have to go into a room stomping around and telling everybody what I am. But what happens is I am very, people do wind up gravitating to me and asking me what I do, because it is obvious that I'm fit and that I'm a runner, and most people know my story if you're in the same room with me, and people will sidle up to me and go, hey, so what's going on? What you doing? And so in that instance, I'm going to let you know. I'm going to talk to you about the difference between vegan food and whole food plant-based and why I don't eat meat, even fish, and like all of that stuff. But I'm not going to go and really, you know, preach to you about it. An example of that is being in New York this weekend with my running, with the people that were finalists, you know, in the running community. Like, it's very, honestly, it's rare that people eat really, really healthfully. because everybody runs so much. It's like, look at Carl Meltzer in the Appalachian Trail he just did. It's like the big headline about his Appalachian Trail record-breaking effort was that he fueled himself on cheeseburgers and candy and beer, right? It's really frustrating sometimes that runners don't really adopt a whole approach to living a healthy life. They think because they don't have the residual fat on their bodies that therefore they're healthy, and that's cool. I don't want to get too deep into that, but it's just because I don't want to offend any of my runner friends because I love them all very, very dearly. But just like the finalists this weekend, I didn't need to go around and make a big deal of what I was eating and didn't eat. But they did ask me ahead of time, the people putting the deal on, what I would prefer as if I had any special diet requests. And, of course, I told them very simply, I'll eat fruits and vegetables, and I don't want any vegan food. I don't want the oils and the added sugars and all of the stuff that goes along with that usually. And so they saw me, I think, during the photo shoot day, kind of picking at what I wanted to eat. I would eat some lettuce and some cucumbers, and they had a few things that I would eat. They had some oats and berries and all. And then there was another photo shoot the Tuesday morning at a running store, and they said, hey, we got breakfast for everybody. And Josh, I got you. And it was very special. I have to say it warmed my heart, and I felt very good about it. Josh, we got you a serving of oatmeal, just plain oatmeal. And I was very appreciative of that. That was very nice. And that's my point. I didn't have to go in the room and say, I don't eat that because of this, and I don't eat that because of this. And yes, I went hungry Monday pretty much because they didn't really have enough sustenance for me. I couldn't get the volume of food that I would normally eat. And I think maybe my behavior that day resonated with someone who was in charge of the food. And for the breakfast the next day, they made sure that they had something for me, which was pretty impressive and very nice. And I didn't say, hey, tomorrow I would like this. No, I just let the world be what it is, and I'll make my way inside of that. I don't need special treatment to be able to keep me healthy. That's my job. I'm going to do that. If it means I can't eat, then I can't eat, or I won't eat because I'm not eating what's being served, right? Very similar situation at the dinner that night at a restaurant we went to. So no big deal. Easy peasy. All I got to do, I know you have a kitchen back there. I know you got vegetables. I know you got rice and potatoes and something. We can get down with, I don't need you to whip up some special off-the-cuff vegan thing. Just steam me some squash, put a serving of rice on the plate. I'm happy. Thank you very much. That's all I need. And so, you know, the simpler you make it and the simpler that the people around you see you make it, well, the less abrasive and the more you can get along without going along, like Dr. Doug Lyle says. I don't know if you've ever heard his talk on that, how to get along without going along, but it's pretty damn awesome. It's pretty awesome.
One last question. How'd you feel yourself during the ultra?
Well, that I leaned on products, honestly. I did a lot of Tailwind. And I use a bar called Bearded Brothers. Mm-hmm. I use one of those every 10 miles or so. And I used race gels because I was talking to Dr. Garth, and he was like, you know, we need, in those instances, you need sugar. And it's hard to do that. I guess I probably could have zizzed up some date water or something like that that I've tried before, and I've had GI issues with the fiber, I think, or whatever. But that was pretty much it. I just in electrolytes, you know, extra electrolytes in the form of a thing called EnduroPax, mm-hmm. which is just a liquefied electrolyte pills that I was spraying in every water bottle. And because I mean, man, I sweat I sweated a ton that day. It was really hot during the day, but very simple. That was all. That was pretty much it. And I probably should have eaten more of the Bearded Brothers bars. But as you get, you know, as you get hot and you're really laying out the effort and, you know, you're working really hard, the last thing you want to do is chew something, right? Yeah. I didn't want it, you know? And so, but that was it. That was my three-prong approach was, the, you know, race gels, Tailwind, and Bearded Brother bars.
Perfect.
I love Bearded Brother bars. They're great.
I haven't tried them. I'll have to try some. I like the Bonk bars when I'm on the bike. But, you know, running, I'm the same way, especially when I get to the run on the Ironman. I'll pull out a gel and I'll look at it, you know, and I'll put it back and I'll pull it out and I'll look at it. It's just something about just, I can hardly pull a tab on it, you know, and, Well, you know, Josh, this was, you know, I thought the first interview with you was good. Or the first chat was good. This was even better. You've helped so many people and I'm so appreciative of you taking time to speak with me. And
well, thanks for having me.
I wish you all the luck in the world and, you know, can't wait to follow you some more. So, you know, good luck and, you know, peace be with you and eat all the broccoli you can and scream it from the mountaintops.
Yes, ma'am. I sure will. I promise. I'll live loud as I can.
All right. Thanks a whole lot.
Thank you.
All right. Good night. So check out Josh Lajani on Facebook. He's on Instagram. He posts his workouts. You know, he's a great guy to follow. And go to runnersworld.com and vote for him to be on the cover of Runner's World magazine. So he's one representing us. So we need to get him on the front cover to spread the word. If you have any questions for me, contact me at jamiedelaney@gmail.com. It's jamiedulaney.com. My website's drdelaney.com. Again, I'm doing the nutrition classes, 6 weeks, 6 sessions, hour to hour and a half each. I cook. I bring food for you to taste. We go shopping. I'm also available for teleconference calls and Skype consultations if you'd like. So feel free to check those out. And enjoy yourself. Go out and move your body, as Josh says. Eat some plants. And don't be afraid to stand up for what you believe in. Have a great week.